Welcome to another episode of GEQ Speaks, your go-to platform for insightful conversations, captivating stories, and thought-provoking discussions. GEQ is a series of experiences, and we're just making sense of that as we go along. That is what we're doing here, one conversation at a time. So sit back, relax, and let's dive into our episode.
Hello, everyone. My name is Maryam Al-Ansari, and I'll be your host for today. So today's episode of GEQ Speaks is going to be about the artists that we have in Georgetown. So let's start with a round of introductions. Please introduce yourself and what form of art you practice.
Hi, I'm Zaina. I am a senior, and I'm majoring in international economics and minoring in history. I'm also Palestinian, so my form of art is tatriz, which is a traditional form of Palestinian embroidery.
Yeah, I'm Hamad Al-Blouchi from Sultanate of Amman. I'm a sophomore. I'm also an econ major, and I like calligraphy and poetry.
Assalamu alaikum. I'm Basil Blouchi, not related to Muhammad Al-Blouchi, but we're both from Amman. And I'm a freshman. I'm planning to major in economics, and my form of art is digital art.
Thank you, everyone. So for my first question, it's how were you introduced to this art form and what made you grow fond of it?
I don't remember ever being introduced to it. It's always been around me, on clothes or anything. But I think I got into it when I was, this is kind of strange, because when I was in year 8 in school, we had a textiles unit in one of my art classes, and I really wanted to do cross stitch tatriz embroidery, but I didn't know how, and I never really knew how. I got one of these cross stitch kits that aren't necessarily Palestinian, but I started doing it, but I never continued with it, and it basically kind of just got scrapped and was sitting in my room. And then a couple of years after that, we moved houses, and I found that kind of scrap again. I actually then actually looked up tutorials on how to do it instead of kind of just freestyling. And that's when I kind of got into it. So I didn't actually really get into tatriz until 2021, even though I've always been interested in it.
So for the calligraphy, it started during a parent meeting in school. One of my teachers told my father that my handwriting is so bad. Everything else was great. Except my handwriting. So I didn't do anything to develop it. But during the pandemic, I sat and started writing things. And at that time, I realized that I like poetry also. So I started writing poetry in my own handwriting. And I continued to develop in both, arts and poetry, and both in calligraphy.
For me, I used to always draw as a kid. I used to go to my dad and ask for a paper and pen and just draw. And there was a period of time where I just stopped for a very long time. And then I started doing, getting into fashion and stuff like that. And I started designing for my brand, and I was using Adobe Illustrator at the time. But then my cousin, who was also an artist, introduced me to Procreate. And that made things a lot more easier. And I started enjoying art a lot more and started doing it for just my enjoyment. And that's how I got into it.
So what's a fond memory that you associate with your art, if you can think of anything?
I think it honestly is any time I teach people tatriz. I think that means a lot to me. The fact that people are actually interested in learning it. I've done it, I think, 3 times at Georgetown. And then I also did it once with my mom's students. My mom's a high school teacher. So that was really nice. And it's always a fond memory, being able to teach other people.
I think every new poem I start reading, I think it has its own special memory. Before calligraphy, I didn't know much of in poetry. I didn't know many poets. But after that, I started knowing lots of them, starting from the Umayyad Khalifa until the modern age. So I learned a lot about the Arabic culture also from poetry and from through all these of readings and writing them with my own hand once, twice, and until reaching the final paper and posting it in Instagram. I used it as a platform to record these moments that I... people don't see the times that I write them so many times. Some paintings take 3-4 times to write them and to take the measures, but I post the last thing. And I think every line of poetry has its own special moment.
For me, a nice fond memory is when I was a kid, and just my doodling phase and just sketching phase. I used to go after school, used to go to my dad's office, and my dad's a really busy guy. So I'd always see him in the offices, and I wouldn't get to spend that much time with him. But I really enjoyed just going to his office, and he would just get me like some paper from the printer and give me one of his pens, and I'd just draw what was there, then I'd show it to my dad, and then my dad would always, like, take a picture, and there's, like, horrible drawings on his phone because of me, but it's a good memory for me.
That's nice. Thank you, everyone. So, would you classify your art form as a hobby or as a passion that you would want to incorporate into your future job?
This is something I actually, like, have talked about a lot with other people. They always tell me I should sell my tatris or like sell my project, and I've always said no. My like way about it now, that if someone like asks me to do something, I'll do it. I'll take money for it. Like, but I haven't been like advertising myself or my work or anything, so I haven't gotten that. But I don't want to do it as something that gets me money or something like a job, because it's, for me, it is a hobby, and for me, it is something that like brings me like peace. So I wouldn't want to like put myself in a position where something that does bring me a lot of joy ends up like being something that has like deadlines and has expectations. Like, I just rather keep it to myself and then still like show it to other people and stuff.
Probably it's a way to calm and to relieve from the stress of life, but also sometimes I use some of poetry as introduction to my essays and in university. Some professors find it weird, but others like it. So, but I'm using it. I think I wrote already 4 essays with a poetry introduction. I try to find a poem that relates with the topic. And yeah, I do. I do find, because there are lots of poems and lots of poems that actually reflect our culture. And it's a way to show that we are a part of a huge culture that we should read about and we should learn about and we should show people about it.
Yeah, for me, I've kind of already started doing it with my brand. It started off as a business thing, and I did art for the brand specifically. But then, like, as the passion grew, I learned that I needed to separate it, because kind of like what everyone said, it's something to calm you down, something to bring you peace. So when I do make art for myself, I make sure to separate it, but sometimes I also make logos for people and stuff like that. So yeah, I mix both, but I try to separate the two because it means a lot to me.
Can you talk more about your brand?
Yeah, sure. Of course. I have a brand called Basilo Clothing. Inshallah, February 2024 is the first drop. And yeah, it's a brand that I wanted to do that incorporates Islam into the fashion world. And it's not only for Muslims, it's for everyone, but the ideas and the themes of the designs are about Islam, and I wanted to make everything like hijabi friendly. Like, if I'm making unisex clothes, I want to make sure that hijabis are able to wear it. If I'm making women's clothes, I want to make sure that hijabis are able to wear it, because I feel like that's something that's not really found in the fashion industry nowadays. And I also want to make sure that it's nice, it's beautiful, it's pretty. It's not just like something that kind of like fits what you need for Islam. It also looks nice and you can express yourself with it. So yeah, Basilo Clothing. Thank you.
So anything you're comfortable with sharing, what are some challenges that you faced when practicing this hobby, whether it's internal or external?
I think for me, the fact that there's a lot of history behind everything you do. So you need to like actually, I realized after kind of practicing it for a while that like you actually need to know the designs that you're doing, the motifs that you have. Initially, when I started Tatriz, there was still kind of a lack of resources that were like free and easily available. You had to buy like books, and to ship them to Qatar was really expensive. I bought a book when I went to Jordan, and it was really useful. But then a couple of months after that, like, a lot of sources got digitized, which was really good. Like, and it all became free, all these motifs that you can copy and then implement into your own designs. There's also a really big online Tatriz community, so that's also good. But a lot of them are also not based in the Middle East, surprisingly. Because I feel like if you're in the Middle East, if you're, it's not that big of a deal that you do Tatriz. If you're abroad in the US, then it's like, wow. Which I understand. It's a way to actually like bring people together when you're abroad, when you don't have that community. So I guess one struggle that I just really faced was having to actually learn the designs I was doing, being able to find them in like high quality grids. Because for a while I used to copy like designs that I found pictures of, and it was really like straining on like my eyes, because you had to like zoom in on the picture to be able to see where the stitches are. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I usually use the an Ottoman font from the Ottoman Empire. So some people find it hard to read, although they see it nice. It's called a Diwani, Al-Khat Diwani. So this was a challenge. I tried to make it much simpler than before. I think you can see, if you can see my posts, you will see, you will realize that I'm trying to make it much simpler than it was before. The other challenge is that some Arabs even don't understand the poetry that's written, because it uses classic Arabic. So I'm trying to pick some simple, let's say, lines, or to at least take modern poems. But I'm also trying to introduce a part of our culture that we are forgetting in these days. So these two challenges.
For me, it's because I'm kind of new into art and digital art. I'm still trying to figure out what my art style is. So I'm just really experimenting with many different things. And I'm starting to hone it down, but like, I want to make sure that I'm able to express my culture as well, of express my feelings and emotions and thoughts and everything. And just having like coming up with the idea and just using my creativity tends to be the hardest part of the process, and just thinking of something to draw. But once I get started on it, it's just like a freeing experience. So I think the hardest part is actually just getting started, for me at least.
So Mohammed mentioned that the culture and the language like plays a role in the difficulty of the arts and poetry and all. So in relation to that, many people say that the arts is like a dying field. What is your opinion on that?
It is a really hard question. But I think we can modernize it. I think we can use calligraphy, for example, in mosques architecture. We can introduce it in levels to people. We should not start with classic Arabic poetry as I did, because it's really hard. So I think schools or universities should play this role of reintroducing things from our culture. It is not only because it is a part of a culture that, or a heritage that we should be holding for no reason. No, because it is also nice when you understand the feelings of a person who was living 1,000 years ago. What was he thinking about the things that was surrounding him? It makes you relax, and it makes you calm, and you know that this life is actually nothing to stress about, or nothing to overthink about. Everything will change. Everything will be good once for you, at least in life. So I think, yeah, although it's hard, but we are trying.
I personally feel like the arts is never gonna die. I think it's in everything that we see nowadays. You know, from the architecture of the buildings and like the art pieces that we see in the walls and everything. And it's something that will always exist, and it's always existed and will always continue to exist. And it would change in forms, and it would change in the way it looks like. But creativity is something that is very, very important in this life. And it's very important to have in a community, very important to have in someone's life, in your family and everything. And I think it's something that should be fostered. If you see, like, for example, I saw my niece drawing and expressing her creativity. And I told my sister to like make sure she keeps doing that, make sure she enjoys that, support that, because it's something that's very important. And it's something that will benefit you in your life, not just like artistically, but in everything in your life. You need creativity, and art will continue to exist. It will never die. But kind of like Muhammad said, we need to modernize that. We can't just keep like the old way of doing things. And that's why, like, we see nowadays with digital art is a modernized way of doing art. And it made it much easier for me to do art because I don't need to buy the supplies. I don't need to do anything. I can just like open my iPad and draw and express myself. So I think as we modernize it, the more it will grow, and I don't think it will ever die. And yeah, it's something that was vital and important in our life.
It actually reminds me of a line of Al-Jawahiri, an Iraqi poet. He says, "Uhawilu kharqan fil hayati fama ajra." The line means that I'm trying to stay in this life, although I know that one day I'm going to die. So he's showing that the artist, the main message of any artist is actually to reach the internality and to try to pass these emotions and feelings to the coming generations. And actually, because I'm reading his line now, means that he achieved what he was thinking about.
Yeah, and I think even for Tatriz, like the way that right now, I think it's really an art form. In the past, it was not just an art form. It was a way of saying your class, your marital status, where you're from. Like, it had a lot of like social signifiers that, like, if you wore a certain thobe with certain colors, with certain designs, it meant that you came from a certain place, or you were married, or you were not married, or you were widowed, or you were from a lower class, or you were a farmer. Like, they had, or you were even like a Christian. Like, they even had their own motifs. So, but now, because a lot of people obviously were exiled from Palestine, what has happened is that people have met in refugee camps, and all of these designs have intermingled. These distinctions are not as seen anymore, and now, like, I think everyone wears thobes, even though not all areas wear thobes. Like, where I'm from, we don't wear thobes with tatris. We wear something completely different because we're farmers, and I mean, technically, yeah, we're farmers, and we don't actually have the time to sit down and make a thobe because we have to, like, be engaged in subsistence farming. So it's changed a lot. It's adapted, but people have adapted it in, like, a really beautiful way. It's not only on thobes now. It's on t-shirts. It's on hoodies. It's on, like, blazers. It's on scarves. It's on everything. I think it's adapted in a really nice way, and just because it's adapted doesn't mean that it's not as important anymore. Just because these social, I don't know, like, motifs are not there anymore doesn't mean that Tatriz has lost its purpose, because now it's a way to signify that you're Palestinian abroad, and that still means a lot to a lot of people.
If I may also add my opinion, there's, like, a new wave of minimalism that I personally am against, because if you look at architecture from centuries ago, they're full of details and they're very intricate, which in my opinion make them very pretty, and, like, it shows the hard work that is being put into them. But with the new wave of minimalism, it's just making everything bland, and it's making life, like, boring, in my opinion.
I agree with you with the minimalism aspect, but I also believe that with a lot of things that we see nowadays, it kind of just comes in as a cycle. As we see minimalism, like, happening and as the more prominent style, especially using, like, logos and things like that, I'm starting to see in different aspects and areas that maximalism is starting to come back. And these details and everything is coming back, and it's something that makes, I feel like it makes the world more beautiful, kind of just seeing things, like, with so much detail and care. Yeah, it's going to come back, and just going to keep going that cycle of maximalism, minimalism, and things in between.
I remember Nizar Qabbani, a Syrian poet, he visited Alhamra in Spain, and he described these details in the roofs, and he said, "الزركشات أكاد أسمع نبضها والزخرفات على السقوف تنادي." So he says that these details actually call people, and they are alive; they are not dead.
That's nice. Thank you, everyone. So as a conclusion, what would you like to tell people about your art form?
I think it's more than just an art form. I think it's a form of resistance. I think it has been... So this is something... this is something I've been looking at, like in my classes as well. Like I've written two final papers about Tatriz. My last paper that I wrote Tatriz acting as a social movement, and I basically like Tatriz is more than just an art form. To me, it's an art form because I don't really do much with it. But to others, to for example, refugees in Lebanon and Jordan, it's their means of life. That's how they get their income. That's how they're actually able to sustain themselves and their families through organizations that, you know, will hire these women and then sell their tatriz. It's a way of bringing a community together that's abroad. Like that's something I mentioned before. It's a way of introducing people to Palestine and the Palestinian culture. It's like I said, it also adapts. Like I've seen that now people have been coming out with tatriz designs that have watermelons or that have like handala on the paraglider, the same way that like we saw on October 6th. So it's something that adapts, and it's a way of resistance and a way of keeping culture alive in a time where culture is being erased or even being stolen. So I think it's really important to, you know, keep it alive and share it. Yeah,
I probably would say the same thing, that poetry and calligraphy, these two things hold an identity. So we need to keep it alive. We need to learn of our ancestors, of their ideas, of their feelings at least. We need to keep these things because of the value that they have.
For digital art, it's something that makes it very easy to express your creativity and express your thoughts. And art in general is something that gives people a voice. It's a type of language. And digital art makes that language very accessible for everyone. And it's very easy to like start digital art because all you need is an application. And I think that's beautiful because especially in a time nowadays where everyone wants to say something. Everyone needs a voice, specifically with what's going on in Palestine, what's going on in Sudan. Using your art as your language is something that's very powerful. And digital art makes that something very accessible. But at the same time, it takes away some of it. It takes away some of the feeling and the hard labor that goes into art sometimes. And there's a lot of art that we can see in history that the reason it's so special, the reason it's so beautiful is because of the story behind it, of what it took to make it. So in some aspects, digital art is very good, but in some aspects it's not. And I think it's very important to keep both alive, not just one of them. I think it's important to keep digital art alive so everyone can have a voice. But at the same time, all these different art forms is just as important as digital art as well.
Thank you, everyone, for this conversation, and thank you for listening to this episode of GUQ Speaks. We'll see you in the next one.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of GUQ Speaks. We hope you've gained valuable insights and inspirations from our conversation today. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to follow us on our Instagram page at GUQ_speaks, and be sure to leave a review on Spotify to show your support.